Radio Prague News.
Czechs were at the centre of an international hashish smuggling ring. Over 8% of national wealth goes to foreign companies, and this year's winner of the Febiofest has been announced. Police have broken up an international gang that used Czechs to smuggle hashish between Denmark and Greenland. Two Czechs were caught red-handed in a police swoop in Greenland and found in possession of 1 kilogram of the drug. They've been deported back to the Czech Republic. Another 5 Czechs have been arrested in their homeland. Police carried out long-term surveillance of the sophisticated smuggling operation that profited from the high price of the drug in Greenland. The ringleader was a US citizen living in Denmark, but a Czech was highly placed in the logistics of the operation. Some drugs were also shipped to the Czech Republic for sale, mostly in the South Moravia region. The Penta Investment Group has made a bid to buy out minority shareholders in the Fortuna betting company. Penta owns around 68% of the company, but some of the outstanding shares are traded on Prague and Warsaw stock exchanges. Penta explains the move, saying it wants to be a long-term investor in the betting company. Czech economic growth in 2016 came in at 2.3%. The Czech Statistical Office confirmed on Friday growth in the last quarter of that year was 1.9%. The office said that average household income rose by a real 3.1% in the year, with spending by households up 2.7%. The amount of income taken by foreign companies, a result of their ownership of Czech firms, came to 8.4% of total GDP in 2016. The pioneering Czech and international surgeon Vladimír Kochandrle has died at the age of 83. Kochandrle led the team in 1984 that carried out the first successful heart transplant in the then Czechoslovakia. Some of the preparation for that was made in the United States, including at the prestigious Stanford University. Kochandrle also pioneered kidney and pancreas transplants. He was for 7 years the head of Prague's Institute for Clinical and Experimental Medicine until the early 1990s. A member of the ruling Communist Party, Kochandrle said that his pioneering work would not have been possible without links to top party members. The winner of the Prague Febiofest Grand Prix Award is Icelandic writer and director Gudmundur Arnar Gudmundsson for his film Heartstone. The 35-year-old director has said the Danish-Icelandic co-production is partly based on his own experience growing up in an isolated Icelandic fishing village. The film has already won prizes in Chicago, Solon and Warsaw festivals. In tennis, Czech second seed Karolina Plíšková failed to reach the finals of the Miami Open tournament after she was defeated by former world number one Karolina Wozniacki 5-7, 6-1, 6-1. In the men's singles quarterfinals, in a dramatic match, Tomáš Berdych lost to Roger Federer 6-2, 3-6, 7-6. Berdych served for the match at 6-4 in the tiebreak, but Federer reeled off 4 points in a row, winning when Berdych finally double-faulted. And finally, a look at the weather. The weather on Saturday will be warm and sunny across the country, with clouds only in the far west. Top daytime temperatures will range between 20 and 23 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the central bank has reaffirmed plans to end its weak crown policy. The only question now is, when will it actually happen? Young Czech conductor Jakub Hruša wins a dream position with the top UK orchestra. And later, the Czech zoo sawing off the horns of its rhinos to protect them from poachers. All that's coming up in today's programme. The Czech National Bank has reaffirmed that its currency intervention policy, launched in 2013 to keep a strong crown in check against the euro and prevent deflation, is to continue for now, but will likely be phased out by the middle of this year. However, widespread uncertainty now exists over precisely when the interventions will end. with some speculating this could happen as soon as next week. Jan Buresh is chief economist at Patria Finance. Dominic Yoon asked him for his take on the central bank's decision.
Well, the Czech National Bank introduced the foreign exchange regime, intervention regime, late 2013 to support inflation and growth. At the time, it was afraid of kind of a deflation spiral. But for now, the situation looks very different from late 2013. The growth is pretty robust, driven by domestic factors mostly, and we see pretty solid inflation pressures, not only being imported from abroad, but we also see a domestically driven inflation being in place now. We see accelerating wages, and therefore it's time for the Czech National Bank to change somewhat its monetary policy stance and to tighten it a bit. And the first step before raising interest rate is to basically let the koruna float again, to come back to a kind of a managed floating regime of the exchange rate.
So you mentioned the interest rate, the Czech National Bank also decided not to change interest rates at the moment, right, in this decision on Thursday. So that was presumably expected.
Yeah, the Czech National Bank has not changed anything about the interest rates. And basically, before hiking interest rates, the first step naturally should be we come back to the managed float regime on the exchange rate. So that was something that was not really surprising, that the interest rates were left unchanged.
And so the Czech National Bank has been keeping the crown at about 27 crowns to the euro through this action, if I understand correctly. So is it possible now that the crown will begin to strengthen again and that this could harm exporters?
Well, it's difficult to say what will happen with the exchange rate after the regime ends. The Czech koruna has seen a very dramatic inflow of speculative capital during the last 3 months, and therefore, immediately after the exit from the regime, one can imagine when these positions are closed or unwinded, that it might cause a pretty high volatility theoretically in both directions, that we might also see short-term losses on the Czech koruna, despite the fact that the long-term fundamentals definitely point to the stronger crown.
That was economist Jan Buresh. Now, the Czech conductor Jakub Hruša has made a dream come true after being appointed one of the two principal guest conductors at the London Philharmonia Orchestra. Hruša and Santtu Matias Rovali from Finland will take up their shared roles at the start of the upcoming season. They'll be the first conductors to hold the post since the death of Sir Charles Mackerras back in 2010. Ruth Frankovar reports.
Born 35 years ago in Brno in the then Czechoslovakia, Jakub Hruša studied conducting at the Czech Academy of Arts and quickly established himself as a promising young musician on the Czech musical scene. He has been performing regularly with the London Philharmonia, one of the most recorded orchestras in the world, since his debut there in 2011. As of September 2017, Hruša will become one of the orchestra's principal guest conductors, which he describes as a dream come true.
They are technically absolutely amazing. They are very quick. They can really achieve amazing things in short time and without many limits, really. They work very hard, yet the mood is still very nice, which I find a little miracle, to be honest.
In terms of the program, Jakub Hruša says every artist needs to find balance between his intuition and personal inclination.
In the ideal world, it's everything, as much variety as possible, reflection of my personal inclinations, including my background, so that is Czech music, Slavic music, contemporary music, and that all in dialogue with Esa-Pekka Salonen. I want to learn myself and I want to share things which I had learned before with the orchestra.
Esa-Pekka Salonen is the principal conductor and artistic advisor of the London Philharmonia Orchestra. At the moment, Jakub Hruša is chief conductor of the Bamberg Symphony Orchestra, permanent guest conductor of the Czech Philharmonic, principal guest conductor of Tokyo Metropolitan Symphony Orchestra, and a regular guest with many of the world's greatest orchestras. Between the years 2009 and 2015, he served as music and chief conductor of the Prague Philharmonia, and in 2015 he was the very first recipient of Sir Charles Mackerras Award for Promising Artists under the age of 40. Jakub Hruša has also released a number of albums, including a live recording of Smetana's Mávlast from the Prague Spring Festival. Jakub Hruša's next appearance with the Philharmonia Orchestra will be on the 6th of April at London's Royal Festival Hall.
Ruth Frankovar reporting. Now, a Czech zoo known for its long association with rhinos has begun taking drastic action in a bid to protect its endangered animals. Daniela Lazareva has more.
Dvůr Králové Zoo has started sawing off the horns of its rhinos in the wake of a tragic incident at a zoo in France where poachers killed a rhino for its horns. The zoo keeps the largest group of rhinos in Europe, runs a successful breeding program, and is actively involved in efforts to save the northern white rhino from extinction. I spoke to Jan Stejskal, project coordinator at Dvůr Králové Zoo, and began by asking about the threat of poachers to the rhino herd.
It's to understand the context of the situation in which we are right now, it's necessary to know that already actually in the year 2013, the British police warned local zoos in Kent that the rhinos might be under threat from poachers. So actually since that time, we've been aware of a possible attack even of our zoo. Then, as you mentioned, there are various criminal gangs that operate in Europe, and we know that at least from 2010, there were numbers of thefts from museums and from other collections. I think it was more than 70 attempts to steal trophies with rhino horn from museums and from other exhibitions. So we know that there are criminal networks that operate in Europe, and that you know, in this situation, it's difficult to pretend that there is no threat to any zoo in Europe.
So you're not taking any chances. How many rhinos will this concern?
I'm sorry, but I cannot comment on an exact number of the rhinos that we are going to dehorn. But we will do it to all the rhinos where we regard it as necessary. Just to explain this, we have, for example, a rhino Natal who wraps his horn naturally. So in his case, it does not make sense to shorten it because it's short anyway. So, you know, in such cases, or we have a rhino who is going to be shipped to another zoo, and then we leave the decision with this another zoo, because if he would come to a group of rhinos or to a crush of rhinos where the others would have a horn, then it could cause behavioral problems for him to enter the group without a horn.
Right. What does this process entail? I understand it can only be done to healthy rhinos.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, if we take it from a health point of view, then for the rhino, it means actually nothing what would be, let's say, serious. Because the matter of a horn is very similar to something like a nail or a hair. So, you know, from health point of view, it's nothing if you cut it. But the rhinos are not, let's say, calm or patient enough that you could do it when they are fully conscious. So you have to sedate them. So this procedure poses a very little risk for a rhino. But it's very little, and we do it regularly in our zoo.
So there is no stress linked to it, to their well-being, that might affect their breeding or anything like that?
Definitely no breeding, but as I said, there might be, let's say, behavioral consequences, but this has to be solved.
What does that mean, behavioral consequences?
It means what I said, that if you have a rhino without horn and you have him in a group where the others, where the other rhinos have horns, then, you know, it would be advantage for them, for example, if they fight for dominance.
It's vulnerable, so, right.
Yes, so if you want to dehorn rhinos, then the whole group that you keep together should be dehorned. Or you would have to know very well your animals to know that they can stand it even without a horn.
And how big is your group of rhinos?
We have altogether 21 rhinos at present. We have 4 southern white rhinos and we have 17 black rhinos.
What happens to the horns when you cut them off? I understand they're being stored outside the zoo's premises, is that right?
No. We do not keep them at the zoo. We take it away from the zoo. We will not comment exactly on the place where we have them, but it's a safe place. And we've been considering what to do with horns, and one of the options is to burn it. It's similar to action that we took already in 2014 when we burned our rhino stockpiles to bring awareness to the plight of rhinos.
That's right. That was an international event to protest against poaching and smuggling. Has the situation improved since then, or has it worsened?
It's difficult to say because what you have to work on is demand in East Asia, and I would say that the awareness is higher in this part. But it's very difficult to get information about the consumption decreased. At the moment, if you look at the numbers of rhinos that are poached in Africa and in other parts of the world, I would not say that the consumption is lower, but I would say that the rise of poaching that we witnessed from 2017 on is lower, and now it's kept on the constant level and maybe is slowly decreasing. It's difficult for me to derive from this fact any conclusion about level of consumption in East Asia.
You have a successful rhino breeding program in Dvor Kralove Zoo. How is it coming along? I believe you celebrated the birth of 2 baby rhinos last year, is that right?
We actually celebrated birth of 3 baby rhinos last year. The last one was in November, and it was something really special because it was a very small black rhino. They usually have a weight at the birth at around 35 kilograms, and this very young female was only 17 kilograms, and she could not reach to suck from her mother, so she actually had to be bottle fed by our keepers. And what was fantastic was that they were actually able to milk her mother, so she was bottle fed, but with milk from her mother. And after about 10 days, when she grew enough, she could start suckle from her mother. So this is something, I would say, very unusual and exceptional, what they have achieved.
That's fantastic. So you won the fight for her life.
Yeah. It was. If it would be in the wild, she would not survive.
Right. I believe that you're also part of an international program. You return rhinos to the wild. Is that right?
That's right. We actually returned one rhino to Africa, to Mkomazi in Tanzania last year. It was in June. And after, let's say, it's about 6 or 7 months after the translocation, we know that it was successful. The animal is relaxed, feels perfectly. And now Tony Fitzjohn, who is running the conservancy or the rhino sanctuary there in Mkomazi, he is preparing her to be introduced to a male. So he has a special section where he has where he holds 2 males, and currently he is dividing this section with a special fence, and then he will decide, you know, to which of these males the rhino female that came from the Kralove Zoo would be introduced.
So in general, the project is proving successful?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the, if not the most successful, establishing of a new population in Tanzania.
And you will continue with it?
We will support it. It's difficult for me to say whether we would send there another rhino. I think, you know, this place seems to be satisfied at the moment. But in December last year, we visited Rwanda, where they lost their last rhino in 2007. And there is a serious project that is supported by government of Rwanda to bring rhinos back. And there have been discussions between Rwandan authorities and South African authorities and European zoos, what would be the best way how to establish a new population in the country. And we as a Dvor Kralove Zoo, with our experience in Africa, are, let's say, strongly involved in these discussions. And we hope that we could help to manage to bring rhinos from more than one European zoo to Rwanda to start new population of rhinos in this African country.
You have spearheaded international efforts to save the white rhino from extinction. These efforts now appear to have come to a dead end. Is there any hope at all?
I have to say that I would not call it dead end at all. The truth is that we are at a dead end with the natural breeding, but there is still a chance through artificial techniques of reproduction. And during last year, we've actually come pretty far from where we were a year ago. Now we work in the European zoos, because what we have to achieve now is to develop or produce an embryo in vitro. There are two ways. One way is through harvesting oocytes from live donors. There are still two last northern white rhino females that belong to the Vukralova Zoo, but currently are held in Kenya in Olpejeta Conservancy. And the other way how to get embryo in vitro would be through stem cell research. So regarding the first way, it means regarding harvest of the oocytes, we have to optimize the procedure on southern white rhinos. These are close relatives of the northern white rhinos. So for more than 1.5 years, we've been cooperating with European zoos who provide their old southern white rhino females for other purposes. It means that these females are not capable of reproduction anymore, but they still cycle. So it means that we are able to harvest oocytes. And just to understand how difficult these attempts are, just imagine that it's a 2-ton animal, or animal that weighs 2 ton, and you have to reach with a special tool about 1.5 meter inside the body of a female. There you have a ultrasound probe in the end of this tool and a needle next to it, and you try to aspirate, let's say, very, very small bubble that is about 5 millimeters in diameter. So it's a very, very small thing. And you operate next to bladder, and if you puncture bladder, then the patient would have a really serious problem, and it could even cost him his life. So this is just to explain, you know, how the procedure works. We've been working.
Is this being done?
It has been done. We've been cooperating with colleagues from IZW Berlin and from Avanta Institute in Cremona. And so far, we have done this procedure in 12 females in European zoos, and there were no health consequences on any of these females. So I would say that this is very successful. We have reached number of oocytes that were sent to Avantea in Cremona. And what is the best achievement that we have is that we actually have initial stages of this in vitro embryo. We still do not have a fully grown embryo that we could transfer to a surrogate mother of a southern white rhino origin, but we are on the way, and we have proceeded quite far from where we were last year.
So what happens next?
Yeah, what we have to achieve is an embryo that is in a blastocyst stage. So it means it's an embryo that could be put into a surrogate mother. Because we work now with the southern white rhinos, so when we are sure that we have optimized the protocol for harvesting the oocytes and developing an embryo, then we would go to Olpejeta, where the last northern white rhino females are held. Their names are Nain and Fatu. They were born in Vukralova Zoo. So I hope that before the end of this year, we could visit Olpejeta and try to harvest oocytes from the females. And we would likely take these oocytes back to Europe, because for this experiment, you need the best possible equipment in laboratory. So we are not sure whether we would be able to set up it in Kenya. So at the moment, we think that it would be probably safer to take all sites out of the country and get them to a laboratory in Italy. But this still has to be decided.
When are you, the next step. When are you hoping this could take place? Within a year, 2, 3?
I hope this could take place before the end of this year. And, of course, we would try to make an embryo from the oocytes that would be harvested in Olpejeta. But it does not mean that we would immediately put it into a surrogate mother. The thing is that if you harvest oocytes, or let's say eggs, then it is very difficult to freeze them, because it's a very large cell, and you have a very high chances that you would destroy it during the freezing process. On the opposite, embryos are much easier to be frozen, so if we achieve northern white rhino embryos, there are two ways. We could immediately put it into a surrogate mother, or we could freeze it. So I would say, you know, that if we would be able later this year harvest oocytes and create an embryo, definitely at least a part of it would be frozen for use later.
How many are left? Two? Northern
just
white rhinos?
Males, northern white rhinos, there are just two left.
In the world?
In the world there are three northern white rhinos left. All of them live in Olpegeta. One of them is Sudan, who is very old male. He is over 40. So, to be honest, he is definitely, you know, in his last days. With females, it's a bit better, but it's his daughter and his granddaughter. And one of them is 26 years old, and the other one is 17 years old. Both are cycling, but both are incapable of natural reproduction.
And there are none left in the wild?
There are none left in the wild. I think that the last signs of their presence in the wild were spotted in 2007. So it's about 10 years since the last one was spotted.
So you have two females. What are the chances for the white rhino?
Actually, it's true that we have only three animals, but we have a sample of 12 animals. So if I come back to what I explained previously about the other way how to reach embryo in vitro, I mean through stem cell research, then if we would succeed with this way, because, you know, if you are able to develop the stem cells from each of the specimen, then you could actually, in a few years, hopefully, develop even reproduction cells through the stem cells. And in this case, we could work with the 12 specimens. And it means that, let's say, that the genetic pool would be wide enough to sustain population, because we know examples from past, for example, with European bison, that the animals can be saved even from so small numbers.
Right. Mr. Steyskal, good luck with the program.
Thank you very much for your interest, and I hope that next time we speak, I will have good news.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Jan Steyskal from Dvůr Králové Zoo, and he was talking to my colleague Daniela Lazareva. If you have any comments about today's programme here on Radio Prague, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, and we're also on Facebook and on Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.